listening to El Paso Chihuahuas Baseball on 600 ESPN El Paso.
As we can play in the second inning, no score. Sacramento's Slade Heathcott strikes a ground ball single up the middle. And with Sacramento batting in the top of the second inning, we welcome in a special guest that we'll have on momentarily here. Jay Jaffe, a writer for Sports Illustrated. He's the author of The Cooperstown Casebook, a book that a lot of people are buzzing about this summer. And if you're not familiar with Jay's work, he's an expert on the Hall of Fame. He's had 16 years, I read, really devoted to that topic. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct. I started writing about it back when I was in my first year of blogging at a site called Futility Infielder. This would be for the 2002 ballot. And I've covered every Hall of Fame election since. Starting in 2013 for Sports Illustrated. Starting in 2004 for Baseball Prospectus, where I developed a system called JAWS, the Jaffe Wins Above Replacement Score, which is kind of an advanced statistical way of comparing candidates to the players who are in the Hall of Fame, and that's sort of been the driver of all this. But my research hasn't just been limited to that.
So your first was 2002. I'm trying to think. Was that Paul Molitor and Eckersley?
2002. Let's see. Molitor was 2004, which was the first okay. year that I wrote for Baseball Prospectus. 2002, I think, was when Jack Morris debuted on the ballot, and all the drama that came with that.
He pitched to the score, they say.
Yeah. He pitched to the score, they say. I think Alan Trammell might have been our first year candidate on that one too. Yeah, and he lasted the whole 15 years. So Morris would have been actually on the ballot for a couple of years by then. But you know, it was really at the beginning of the Burt Blyleven, Jack Morris debate, which really kind of came to dominate what I was doing there for several years in terms of the perceptions of one player's career as judged by traditional statistics versus what the more advanced statistics had to say about another player's career when you get away from just sheer wins and losses. It was Burt Blyleven getting elected to the Hall of Fame in 2011 and Jack Morris getting close but no cigar, although I think eventually he will get in.
We are in the second inning. Runner on at first for Sacramento. No score here. We're chatting with Jay Jaffe of Sports Illustrated. You can find his work online. You can also hear him on Wednesdays with Steve Kaplowitz on this very radio station. But tonight we're talking to Jay about the Cooperstown Casebook. His new book came out July 25th. And Jay is actually here in the ballpark to not only throw out the first pitch, which he did earlier, but do a book signing. So if you're hearing us in the ballpark, you can pick up a copy of Jay's book. Right here tonight at the game. In fact, when Jay's done with us, he's going to head downstairs. You can meet him there. And I'm glad you mentioned the JAWS system, because what Jay did is develop a statistic that I see referenced on MLB Network, that I've seen on various websites. I see it on Baseball Reference. And what must be a great thrill for you is that I've also seen voters cite it as part of their decision-making.
Yes. It's something that's caught some traction, really, I think, especially once it got onto Baseball Reference, in 2012. It's on every player page now, and it's explained there. And having it there, having it on Sports Illustrated, brought it to the attention of a lot of voters. And you know, I had just gotten into the BBWAA when that happened. And, you know, suddenly a lot more people were paying attention to the work I was doing. And, yes, you know, a lot of them have cited it as being, you know, something that they reference when they're making their decisions. And, you know, I don't expect everybody to be slaves to the system. And I think it takes some common sense, like any tool, you know, to use properly. But I am, you know, thrilled and flattered when somebody says that that was something that was instrumental in helping them decide on a particular player. Tim Raines being a great example of that, a guy who got in on his 10th and final chance on the ballot this year, somebody who my system flags as being the 8th best left fielder of all time, and somebody who I had been advocating for his entire run on the ballot.
Yeah, if I recall correctly, when Tim Raines was first on the ballot, the percentages were in the 20s, right?
Yeah, he got about 25% in his first year, and I think he even slipped back a little bit in his second year, and it didn't look very good for him. And really, especially when they changed the eligibility window from 15 years to 10, when he was 7 years on the ballot, it looked like that was kind of the death knell for his candidacy. But, you know, thanks to I guess myself and some other ardent boosters, my friend Jonah Carey, a Montreal native who grew up watching him, you know, we were able to get the word out on Reigns, and I think to explain the urgency to voters of why this guy belonged. My system basically flags him as being very comparable in value to Tony Gwynn, seven or eight-time batting champion, 3,000 hit club member, guy who sailed in on the first ballot with 97%+ of the vote. You know, and Tim Raines was every bit as good, but you know, he had the walks instead of the hits and the stolen bases to make up for some of the power.
Yeah, the stat that you taught me, I read in one of your articles years ago, is that Raines reached base more times than Tony Gwynn, and that would surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, he was just a, you know, the consummate leadoff man. And he kind of spent his career in the shadow of Ricky Henderson, who's, you know, I think by general consensus the best leadoff hitter of all time. I think you can make a case that Tim Raines is the second best or the best National League leadoff hitter of all time.
Sacramento pitcher Matt Gage batting here, no score. He swings and misses at an 0-2 pitch. So we're going to keep Jay Jaffe around here. We're going to take a quick commercial break. Again, we're chatting with Jay from Sports Illustrated, author of the Cooperstown Casebook. He is signing copies of that book at the ballpark tonight. Second inning, no score on 600 ESPN El Paso.
On 600 ESPN El Paso.
Back at Southwest University Park, bottom of the second inning. Hunter Renfro stepping into bat. We're chatting with Jay Jaffe of Sports Illustrated, author of the Cooperstown Casebook. And we have some San Diegans listening. By the way, here, no score as the Chihuahuas bat in the second. And I'd like to rewind back. You and I were speaking during the commercial break about somebody who was very, very close to being elected this past year. And that is the most well-known Padres pitcher of all time, Trevor Hoffman. Do you feel that maybe this next ballot he'll be voted in?
Yeah, I think he's got a very good chance of getting in. He was in the 70% plus range in the last ballot. It's going to be a very crowded ballot up top this year. We've got Chipper Jones and Jim Thome, both of whom look like excellent first ballot choices. And then Vlad Guerrero, who's also above 70% last time. So, you know, there have only been a small handful of four-man classes. We had one a couple years ago. I think this has the potential to be another one. The last time it had happened before 2015 was in 1955, so a comparative rarity, but we could get another one here.
Hunter Renfro hitting a ground ball single to begin the bottom of the second inning. No score. Christian Villanueva batting. Jay Jaffe, author of the Cooperstown Casebook. It's available in a bookstore near you. You can also grab it online where books are sold. Talking to Jay, the person who developed the JAWS system, Jay mentioning earlier. That's really gained a lot of attention with the voters. There's a ball low on Villanueva. So you mentioned Tim Raines. Tim Raines gets in. Who, in your opinion, are some of the people that are eligible that should be in the Hall of Fame, but they aren't yet?
Well, you know, from the current ballot, the one that I point to as having a very Raines-like case in terms of its urgency is Edgar Martinez, the great designated hitter for the Mariners for so long. One of the best hitters of all time. And when you look at the value he created, and he did play 500-plus games at third base and did it competently. It was because he was getting injured so often that they moved him to the DH role permanently. But he created more value than the average Hall of Fame third baseman, even with the penalty that wins above replacement, which is the currency in JAWS, assesses each player. He was that good a hitter that he made up for that. Larry Walker, another guy who's not getting the time of day from voters, but is one of the top 10 right fielders of all time by my system. Mike Messina and Curt Schilling, both among the top 30 pitchers, starting pitchers of all time. I think there are a lot of ways to look at it, but you know the debate over performance-enhancing drug users and all that. I mean, I do think that based on the timing of when they're alleged to have done what they did, I still think that the Hall of Fame should have room for Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens. But I understand that that's a very that's a hot button issue, and I think one thing I've learned in 16 years of writing about this is no matter where you stand on that issue, somebody out there will always disagree with you vehemently. I see that as as the the game's drug problem in the larger perspective of a labor war, and I write about that at length in the book. And I know people offhand may find that argument tough to convince them, but I hope people can read that and hear me out and get an understanding of where I'm coming from with that mm-hmm. side of the issue.
Yeah, there's no doubt that's a sub-story of every announcements every January.
Yeah, yeah.
Who didn't.
Right. I think it's an inevitability that those two get in. I think Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa, I don't think it's nearly as likely. Rafael Palmeiro as well. And who knows about Manny Ramirez, probably going to be on the outside looking in for a while, and eventually Alex Rodriguez as well. But, I think to me, there's a big difference between what happened before there was testing in place and what happened after.
Nick Buss puts down a bunt, and he's safe. Chihuahuas with three singles in a row here. Bases loaded. No one out in the second inning. No score. Jay mentioning Mike Mussina, and that makes me think of the El Paso Chihuahuas connection to Mussina. El Paso's hitting coach Morgan Burkhart got his first major league hit against Mussina.
Oh, wow. Okay.
And the manager, Rod Barajas, hit a home run in a World Series against Mussina.
Oh, that's
both
right.
Of them had these great moments of their careers against Mussina. So for them, that makes their resume even better if Mussina's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah, hey, absolutely. Absolutely. Mussina was an excellent pitcher for a long time. I've argued that if he'd had the first half of his career in New York and the second half in Baltimore, he'd be in the Hall of Fame already, because I think people don't really realize just how good he was when he was with the Orioles. And at the same time, he's actually one of the rare free agent contracts big money free agent contracts that worked out pretty well. He kept it together for most of his run with the Yankees. Had a very strong season in his last one, his first time winning 20 games in 2008, the year before he retired.
You know, I've thought about that with is Billy Wagner.
Another
Wagner
guy.
If Wagner kept going a couple more seasons, maybe his name comes up more.
Yeah, Wagner. Boy, Wagner's got a compelling case. The big problem for him is he just doesn't have a lot of innings. But, inning for inning, the most dominant reliever of all time in terms of opposing batting average and strikeout rate. I mean, just numbers that jump off the page. I mean, you compare him head-to-head to Trevor Hoffman, and it's like, I'm not sure people are promoting the one that needs to be promoted there. Hmm. I think it's an uphill battle to make a case for any reliever this side of Mariano Rivera. I think Billy Wagner, unfortunately, is probably going to have to wait some time before he really gets his due. But I've tried to make the case for him, and I come away convinced that the numbers are at least very impressive and that he deserves a lot more consideration than he's gotten.
Diego Gorriz batting here. Bases loaded. No one out. No score. Second inning. Diego, 9 homers. 50 batted in. As Matt Gage throws. Here's a pitch outside. I look forward to reading your book, and something that was so interesting to read about was how the committees were used, and there was a time in the Hall of Fame's history where people were sort of voting in their friends.
Yes. The Veterans Committee that ran from 1953 to 2001 in particular was notable for a lot of cronyism, and in particular the 1967 to 72 period when Frankie Frisch, the great Hall of Fame second baseman for the Giants and Cardinals, was on the committee. A lot of his ex-teammates, his ex-teammates and those of Bill Terry, his first baseman for the Giants, who came on to the committee in 71 and was on until 76. There's a lot of guys there who really don't look like Hall of Famers, especially now that we've got the advanced statistical systems, to illustrate just how easy it was to hit 300, for example, in the 20s and 30s. I mean, people didn't have the same access to statistical stuff that they do now, but the whiff of cronyism with those guys in terms of the connections, I think they've, like, each of those guys has four former teammates who got in a 6-year span, and it's like unmistakable whiff of cronyism. And there are other examples of that throughout the history. Bobby Doerr, the great Red Sox second baseman, got in the first year that Ted Williams was on the Veterans Committee. That one's a little bit more defensible, but it is striking, the timing of it. And you can point to a few others like that where suddenly, you know, the big Hall of Famer from a team's career gets on the committee and suddenly somebody else is getting in that was connected to him in his career. I'm trying to remember if it was Enos Slaughter or Johnny Mize that got in when Stan Musial was on that committee. There's another one like that as well.
Rocky Gale batting here, takes a pitch inside. Villanueva's at third base. Diego Gorisa, ground ball into a double play that brought home a run, so the Chihuahuas had 1-0 in the second. We're chatting with Jay Jaffe of Sports Illustrated, author of the Cooperstown Casebook. He is on site tonight. He's making various stops around the country. I saw you had some book signings in New York City. Also had one in Cooperstown, right?
Yeah, I did. This was a real thrill. I got to go up for induction weekend. And on the Saturday, the day before inductions, I was on Main Street in Cooperstown signing books there. And, you know, people in town to see the induction stopped by, and some of my fellow writers stopped by as well. It was really cool, you know, and just to be up there. And then on Sunday after the inductions, the Society for American Baseball Research has a meeting up there, and I did a little talk at that for about 15 minutes, and then signed some more books there. So that was really cool.
Gale hits a pop-up right side of the infield, and it's caught to end the inning, so the Chihuahuas score once. Well, Jay, you're a friend of El Paso. This is actually your second time visiting our ballpark, and we wish you well with the book. I look forward to reading it, and hope you sell some copies of the ballpark
all
tonight.
Right. Yes, thanks so much, Tim. It's good to be back, and you know, thanks to El Paso, because this is a place that's really supported me here through my career, and it's cool to have this connection.
Again, that's been Jay Jaffe. Pick up the Cooperstown Casebook. Ahead 1-0 at the end of 2 on 600 ESPN El Paso.
600 ESPN El Paso is KROD El Paso, your home for Chihuahuas baseball throughout the 2017 season.